In reviewing FCPA bribery patterns, it is really a rare occasion when a company's CEO is at the epicenter of the criminal conspiracy. In the BitMining case, standing atop all of the actors is the CEO, Zeng Min Pan, BitMining's former CEO and a Chinese national. DOJ had no choice but to charge him with a criminal FCPA conspiracy. Others could have been charged, and it is interesting that Pan's indictment is limited to just him, but it also reflects the fact that this case, I think, came to DOJ's attention through enforcement actions that were brought in Japan against various individuals in connection with the bribery scheme. And it probably reflects the fact that Japan was not able to charge Pan, and whether or not they actually are able to arrest Pan or where he is, it's not very clear yet.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkoff.
Welcome. This is Michael Volkoff, and you're here today talking about the BitMining FCPA case, which came out earlier this year, and we're going to do a deep dive into that. Welcome, everyone. Hope holiday season is going well. This is our last podcast for the year, and then we'll be back starting next year. So I wanted to make sure that we touched on this one because it's an interesting case. Earlier this year, BitMining and its CEO fell under the FCPA hammer. BitMining, which was formerly known as 500.com, resolved investigations with the Justice Department and the SEC for its corrupt scheme to bribe Japanese government officials. On the same day, DOJ announced the indictment of Zeng Min Pan, BitMining's former CEO and a Chinese national, for FCPA violations. BitMining entered into a three-year DPA in tandem with the filing of a criminal information in the District of New Jersey, charging BitMining with one count of conspiracy to violate the anti-bribery and books and records provisions of the FCPA, and one count of violating the books and records provisions of the FCPA. BitMining agreed to pay a fine of $10 million after DOJ agreed with BitMining showing that it was unable to pay $54 million fine as mandated by the U.S. sentencing guidelines. BitMining agreed to settle the SEC case for $4 million, and DOJ credited that $4 million payment against the $10 million fine to just take $6 million, but a total of $10 million. Pan himself is charged with one count of conspiracy to violate the anti-bribery and books and records provisions of the FCPA, one count of violating the anti-bribery provisions of the FCPA, two counts of violating the books and records provisions of the FCPA. Now, as alleged, between 2017 and 2019, Pan supervised the payment of $2 million, approximately $2 million in bribes, to Japanese government officials to win a contract to open a lucrative resort and casino in Japan. Pan employed company consultants to funnel these bribery payments and then tried to disguise the illegal funding of the bribes through sham consulting contracts. The Japanese resort included hotels, casinos, retail, dining, convention facilities, and entertainment venues. This had just been enacted by the Japanese government to allow casinos for the first time in Japan. Pan's bribery payments were made in the form of cash, travel, entertainment, and gifts, and they tried to cover up the payments, as I mentioned, through sham contracts and falsely recording the payments as legitimate expenses, including as management advisory fees. Now, this was all conducted when BitMining, which changed its name from 500.com, that was the company that it was engaged, that was conducting these activities. And in the end, ultimately, 500.com did not win the integrated resort bid in Japan. Now, BitMining agreed to continue to enhance its compliance programs and provide reports to the Justice Department regarding remediation over the 3 years of the DPA and escaped any type of assignment of a compliance monitor. Under the corporate enforcement program factors, DOJ cited 500.com's cooperation credit, including producing documents, data, translating documents, making sure that they could comply with data privacy requirements, and basically outlining the facts of its own internal investigation. The cooperation, however, DOJ noted, was reactive and limited in degree and impact. Further, BitMining engaged in remedial measures, which included increasing governance and oversight of compliance risks and audit findings by the board of directors, promoting compliance and ethics through company-wide communications, incorporating compliance criteria and performance evaluations for senior management, conducting annual risk assessments, creating an anti-corruption policy, and engaging in company-wide training and communications to promote it, and transitioning its business model to an industry that presents a lower corruption risk and reducing its presence in high-risk regions. In other words, they got out of the business of running a casino, or they used to run a lottery service in China. In light of all these considerations, BitMining's criminal penalty reflected a 10% reduction off the bottom of the applicable guideline range. Now, in reviewing FCPA bribery patterns, it is really a rare occasion when a company's CEO is at the epicenter of the criminal conspiracy. In the BitMining case, standing atop all of the actors is the CEO, Zeng Min Pan, BitMining's former CEO and a Chinese national. DOJ had no choice but to charge him with a criminal FCPA conspiracy. Others could have been charged, and it is interesting that Pan's indictment is limited to just him, but it also reflects the fact that this case, I think, came to DOJ's attention through enforcement actions that were brought in Japan against various individuals in connection with the bribery scheme. And it probably reflects the fact that Japan was not able to charge Pan, and whether or not they actually are able to arrest Pan or where he is, it's not very clear yet. As I mentioned before, BitMining was formerly known as 500.com, which is headquartered in Shenzhen, China. And 500.com engaged in a pervasive bribery scheme to influence numerous government officials, including members of Japan's parliament, in its effort to enter what's called the Integrated Resort IR market and obtain licensing to establish an IR casino in Japan. At the time, as I mentioned earlier, Japan had recently lifted its long-standing ban on casinos and passed legislation to legalize gambling. So over this two-year period, Pan and other individuals and third parties funneled over $2 million in bribes. In late 2019, 500.com's offices were raided and Tokyo prosecutors charged its consultants with bribery and prosecuted prominent government officials for accepting bribes. 500.com was unable to enter the IR market in Japan, and the illicit payments were inaccurately reflected in the company's books and records. 500.com was formerly an online sports lottery service operator in China, and in April 2015, 500.com suspended its online lottery services in China after the government altered the rules governing online lottery sales. BitMining, the new name of the company, has now entered the crypto mining business. In July 2018, Japan's National Diet enacted the IR Implementation Act to create a limited number of resorts in Japan designed to integrate casinos with other facilities, such as hotels, convention centers, entertainment venues. And the bribery scheme was discovered in late 2019 when Tokyo prosecutors charged the Japanese officials and consultants in connection with the bribery scheme, and there was a raid, execution of search warrants in connection with those arrests and prosecutions. Now, the bribery plan, Zeng Min Pan, the CEO, targeted his efforts and directed these efforts to secure a valuable casino in Japan, and as part of this effort, orchestrated a widespread bribery scheme designed to influence numerous foreign government officials, including key members of the Japanese government involved in the decision-making as to the licensing. And 500.com recognized that since it didn't have any experience in the luxury resort market, that it needed to gain the support of senior Japanese officials in order to outcompete otherwise well-established U.S. and European companies that were expected to come in and bid on these licenses and try to secure these licenses. And to avoid this competition, 500.com identified certain cities, quote, where under-the-table deals can be used, close quote. They employed three Japanese consultants and consultants' companies to assist in the effort to secure the license. We'll go through the means by which they did this, the various schemes. One was the use of payment of lecture fees. In July 2017, 500.com planned an IR symposium to promote its bid in Okinawa, Japan. Pan invited Official One to be a keynote speaker, which was held in August 2017 at the event. And Official One agreed to be paid a lecture fee of approximately close to $5,000, which Pan approved. Following the lecture, however, 500.com's consultants learned that Official One would be promoted to vice minister in charge of the IR process. Pan approved payment of a larger fee to Official One of approximately $26,000. In other words, an increase of about $21,000. Even though the speech had already been given and Official One had not requested a larger fee, 500.com paid the lecture fee pursuant to a sham invoice issued by an entity owned by Consultant 3. Once payment was received, Consultant 3 transferred the money to a company controlled or owned by Official One. The sole purpose of the inflated lecture fee was to improperly influence Official One. This was recorded as management expense advisory fees. Then there were some other sham consulting fee payments that were used in September 2017. Japan's prime minister abruptly dissolved the lower house of the Japanese National Diet and called for a new general election in October. Hoping to not lose momentum with influential Japanese politicians, 500.com decided to use Consultant One's business, Company One, to funnel cash to various National Diet members. The purpose of the payments was to influence the IR process and gain access to non-public information. Two of the consultants coordinated the delivery of large amounts of Japanese yen in hand-carried bags. Pan oversaw the scheme and specifically approved the payments. To disguise the cash deliveries on 500.com's books, they signed a sham consulting agreement to pay, quote, costs associated with IR research and reports of yen or equivalent US dollars to Company One within 5 days. And they wired 500.com, wired $233,000 to Company One's bank, which then wired the money to a Hong Kong bank affiliated with Consultant Two. And then the wire payment went through a U.S. correspondent bank account. Afterwards, Consultant Two withdrew a portion of the money from the Hong Kong bank account. And then the two consultants, Two and Three, took the money to pay cash bribes to seven Japanese officials in Japan. And these, again, were improperly recorded expenses as management expenses advisory fees. In December, we also had luxury travel, of course. In December 2017, 500.com invited Official One and three other Japanese officials, including Official Two, to travel on a three-day trip from Tokyo to Shenzhen, China, and then Macau, purportedly to attend an IR-related seminar on managing gambling addiction. The real purpose for inviting the officials on the trip was to improperly influence them and gain their support for 500.com's entry into the IR market. 500.com executives, including CEO Pan and the consultants, accompanied the officials on the trip along with employees of Company One and a tour company, a travel agency that was used to partner with 500.com on the IR project. They made improper payments, and this was quite an expensive trip, of $221,000 in connection with this trip, including paying for round-trip private jet transportation from Japan to Shenzhen and Macau, entertainment, meals and hotel costs, shopping, gifts, and cash bribes to all the officials. And again, they recorded these improperly as management expenses, travel expenses. Finally, there was a ski trip. Got to throw that in as well, with 500.com also sponsored a ski trip for Official One, his family members, and Official Two to Hokkaido, Japan in February 2018. The ski trip did not involve a legitimate business purpose and was instead part of an effort to influence Official One and Two and gain their support. Consultant Three and the tour company paid approximately $6,635 for the trip and reimbursed Consultant Three for his share of the costs. And again, they recorded it as management expenses, entertainment and travel expenses. In September 2020, the tour company executive was found guilty in Tokyo District Court of conspiring with Consultant Two and Three to win influence over the IR project by bribing official one and two with the Hokkaido ski trip. This prosecution in Japan is probably what triggered this prosecution because there was no voluntary disclosure. So let's talk a little bit about lessons learned, some important ideas that come out of this. Bitmining, or formerly 500.com, was a doomed company from the beginning. When a CEO orchestrates a bribery scheme with the assistance of other senior executives, shareholders and the public have little chance of ensuring a business operating with ethics and integrity. Its future was sealed when it embraced bribery as a means to avoid or gain an advantage in head-to-head competition against established U.S. and European companies seeking to enter the casinos market in Japan. The Bitmining case stands yet again as another poster child for the dangers of C-suite misconduct. All too often, companies seek to assess their risks and ignore the motives and opportunities that C-suite members may have to engage in misconduct and the importance of appropriate financial controls governing C-suite use of corporate monies. In reviewing a company's risk profile, risk professionals have to be sensitive to the company's participation in significant project tenders and competition. Typically, these projects are very lucrative, involve stiff competition, and present multiple opportunities and incentives for company actors to engage in bribery or other improper conduct to gain certain advantages. Criminals are adept in fashioning also a variety of forms of bribery. Several recent cases have underscored attempts to legalize otherwise improper travel and hospitality arrangements by including brief visits to corporate offices or presentations on legitimate topics, products, and services. 500.com included such a visit and presentation in their trip to Macau. Such arrangements only highlight the overall intent to engage in bribery while seeking to disguise the true purpose of the trip. The 500.com case also underscores the need to enforce third-party retention and due diligence procedures. CEO Pan pushed for the retention of the three consultants with a singular purpose, to pay bribes to Japanese officials. No attempt was made to comply with internal onboarding and due diligence procedures to ensure prior engagement and contracting with third-party consultants. Again, 500.com made no attempt to follow its own internal controls. Coupled with its failure to follow its own internal controls concerning third-party onboarding, 500.com failed to follow its own basic financial controls governing payments. They failed to properly verify that payments to consultants were used for their stated purposes, failed to have mitigating controls to verify that services were properly rendered before paying the consultants, and corresponding expense reimbursements. In fact, the executives at 500.com were able to direct employees to pay invoices without having supporting documented deliverables and to pay cash bribes. So furthermore, 500.com failed to provide also anti-bribery, anti-corruption training to employees and third-party consultants who interacted with government officials on its behalf. Overall, a pretty negative picture and an interesting case, I think, because it shows, again, the dangers of C-suite misconduct. When your leadership is committed to illegal acts, no question that it's just going to permeate the entire organization. And it just truly casts a pall over the whole activity and any commitment of the company to ethics and integrity. Anyway, so that's it. We'll see you in the new year with another episode of Corruption, Crime, and Compliance. To everyone, have a great holiday season and a great time off if you can get some time off, and we'll see you soon.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkoff, go to volkovlaw.com.